Vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udaropasta vegam etan vegam yovisha hetadira sarvamatimim prithivim sashishyat.
And those who have English, let's read the translation together. A sober person who can... Am I the only one with the English? You have English? Yes, the first verse, first page. Are you there? A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Om Ganatimirandasya Gananjanashalakaya Chakru Miritamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Akhanda Mandala Karam Vyaptayena Characharam Tatpadam Darshitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Terubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Yasya Prasada Dhagyupi Sadhyak Sarvagyatam Rajetsa Shri Chaitanya Devame Bhagavan Samprasidatu Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So if you choose one word here from this whole verse, which word do you think is this word?
Vegan.
Vegan, okay.
Dhira.
Yes, dhira. Very good. Yeah. Yavishaheta dhira. Okay, very good. Any other ideas? Which word do you think will help you to remember the whole idea, or which word from this verse Rupa Goswami wants to give us to transform our lives? If we select one word, if we compress it into one word, which word could that be? Dhira? Yes, Alex?
Shishyat.
Shishyat.
Tolerate.
Okay, very good. Tolerate? Vishaheta. Yes, sounds good. Yes. Same. Tolerate. Okay, so it seems we are more or less coming to the same idea. Tolerate. Dhira also means one who can, a sober person who can tolerate. And this is quite interesting. So it says, one who can tolerate these six urges can, Shishyat, can make the whole earth his disciple, the whole earth, if he can tolerate. So, you know, he can become Jagat Guru, which seems to be a pretty high position, the guru of the whole world, right? And even at that high position, what's required from him is not to be free from these vegas, but an ability to tolerate them, which is quite interesting. Yes, you are the guru of the whole world, which is actually even more responsible than being the emperor or the ruler of the whole world, right? Because ruler is just with this life, and guru it's for, you know, for the spirit. And all that's required from you is not even to be free from urge to speak, from the mind's urges, from anger, from urges of tongue, belly, and genitals, but an ability to tolerate them. Are you surprised, or did you already know it? This is very interesting, the qualification that Rupa Goswami is giving here in the beginning of his Sri Upadeshamrita. So Srila Rupa Goswami is a very special person. Srila Rupa Goswami was a very close associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was deputed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to write books. He was taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was empowered to write books about bhakti and also to re-establish holy places in Vrindavan, to discover the places where Krishna performed his pastimes. So this is one of his books that he is giving us. And there is a story that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes would go into ecstasy in Jagannath Puri. So you can in your mind at this moment, so we have a little sun and we have some light also in the room. So you can imagine that we are all transferred from this library, this very solid table, to Jagannath Puri. It is sunlit, sun-covered Jagannath Puri 500 years ago. And imagine how devotees are living in Jagannath Puri. They are all in ecstasy with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then one day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just runs to the shore of the ocean. And on the shore of the ocean, there are many trees, very tall palm trees and other trees. And at the distance, there is a sand dune, like a hill, like a big hill of sand. And Mahaprabhu sees that hill and he is reminded of Govardhan. And he sees the ocean and he thinks this is Yamuna with the trees on the bank of Yamuna. And he goes into the ecstasy of separation with Krishna. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, these ecstasies are described in the last Antya Lila. Very amazing transformations in the body and how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would enter Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, in his ecstasies. And then devotees would find him in an unconscious state, sometimes in completely transformed state in his ecstasies. He would sometimes, his limbs were elongated, sometimes they were contracted, and at any rate he would be sometimes unconscious. So then they would come together and they would know, you know, their beloved Mahaprabhu is unconscious and covered with tears. So they think, how long will he stay in this state? So then they, take the kartals, they take the mridanga, and they start, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Mahaprabhu is there with Radha Krishna on the bank of Yamuna, and then he hears from far away, he hears this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So then he comes back. He comes back, he opens his eyes and he says, oh, you called me back. I was with Radha Krishna. I saw how Radha and Shyamasundara are playing in Yamuna, and in Radhakund. So he would describe he would describe this ultimate goal of our practice, Radhakund, and surrounded by all the other holy places. And on one of such occasions, it is said that he described to the devotees the whole path. So this whole path that we mentioned yesterday, he in short gave to the devotees, and in particular Rupa Goswami, who was a great acharya and a great scholar. He was very learned. So he was able to keep it in his heart, and then he gave it to us as Shivupadashamrita. Shivupadashamrita, the amazing map to the treasure, to the highest treasure that we can imagine, and actually even higher than it's the treasure that we actually cannot imagine. We should try, but actually it's so high that it's actually very difficult to imagine. Just like, I don't know, can you imagine having 40 billion euros, or, 60 billion Swiss francs? How would it be different from having 1 billion francs? Can you imagine the difference? Can you see? For us, it's just a lot. Whether 16 billion or 1 billion or 400 million, it's just a big pile of money. You probably could do a lot of, certainly could probably build a Mayapur, nice Mayapur temple, even though Ambarish Prabhu is really doing a very good job of it. I remember when I was small, my sister gave me the exercise. She challenged me about money. She said, "So do you think money is important? So how much money do you think you need?" So, you know, I was a small boy, I don't know, maybe 10 years or 12 years, maybe 11 or 10. And then I said, "Well, this much." So she said, "So can you say how would you spend it? What do you need it for?" And I, you know, okay, so I could buy a car, so that would be this much. Okay, maybe house, that much. And it turned out that I don't need so much money, as I said. I don't know how to spend it, really. So for us, it's just, even material wealth is sometimes difficult to imagine what these people feel. And maybe it's better not to imagine what these people feel, because they often live a very miserable lives. Yeah, I remember when we were... Our temple, BBT temple, was once in Sochi. It's in South Russia, and there are some mountains there, and they call it Russian Switzerland, these mountains there. They have ski resorts, you know, people go skiing there. So I remember once, like 4 or 5 devotees in our temple, I forgot what was the... At any rate, we decided to go and, you know, just see the mountains, see the place. And so we went there, and we could see all these rich people with, it was long ago, it was 1996 or something, and 5. It was summer, but it was snow up there, and these people, you know, with video cameras, and those times small video cameras were still, you know, a little bit of a luxury, and with expensive equipment, and they were enjoying their life, you know, sun and skiing and snow. But I noticed one thing, that even though we were, you know, without skis and without video cameras, it seemed that we were the happiest people there. Because all these people with all this expensive equipment, they look like a little bit, you know, they were trying to enjoy, but they didn't have as big smiles as we had. We're just having, you know, good time, seeing, oh, mountain, nice mountains, and, you know, look, snow is here, or sun is shining, you know, everything is good. So oftentimes, you know, money can't buy you not only love, but even happiness. Yeah, so this is the highest treasure we can imagine, and or the highest treasure that we cannot imagine. Anyway, this is the highest treasure. This is the best treasure. So Rupa Goswami gives us the exact map. And he begins by describing these 6 things, 6 urges, 6 vegas that we are supposed to tolerate. All right, so what shall we do? This, it would be good to keep somewhere. Can you please help me? I don't know. Yes. Okay. So maybe we can... do we have any blue tack or something? You got some? Okay. And I don't know where we'll put it. On the door or something. Where did you put it last year? Yes. So he's giving these 6 steps. Tell me, what's the purpose of life? Serve Krishna. Very good. How is this called in Sanskrit? In one word. Krishna Prema. Okay. And other words? Some other words? Sanatana Dharma. Okay. What's the name of our yoga?
Bhakti
yoga? Okay, good, very good. So, what we want is bhakti, right? However, does this verse speak about bhakti? And you can guess from my question, I'm expecting the answer, no. This verse doesn't directly speak about bhakti, right? All it speaks about, you know, belly, genitals, mind, and anger. How is it connected to bhakti? Is it a good question? Why? Yes, Alex?
Sometimes before giving the positive, you should give the negative so the people just understand first what not to do.
Yes. So yeah. Before giving the positive, sometimes you have to give the negative. Now, here comes my big challenge. I'm not an artist, and I have to now measure. Right, so this will be our maybe. Uddhava Prabhu could help me, and I will definitely need your ideas now. Alright, so this will be our a symbolic picture. It's not a real good picture. A symbolic picture of the temple of bhakti. So we have chakra on top. This is a chakra. If you want to see a good chakra, go outside and see on top of the temple. So this will be our symbolic representation of a temple. And here we will have, you can imagine either Radha Krishna, or we can just write bhakti. The temple of bhakti. We want to enter the temple of bhakti. So before entering the temple of bhakti, which is our purpose, we oftentimes have to go over the steps. We have the steps near the entrance. How many steps are there? Four. Okay, very good. Here we have six. A little more difficult. And they may be sometimes higher. So what are the six steps? Maybe these are too steep, huh? One, two, three, four. Anyway, these are symbolic steps. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. All right. So these are the steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That Rupa Goswami gives before we enter the temple of bhakti. In themselves, the steps are not bhakti yet. In themselves, the steps are not in the temple. However, to enter the temple, we do need these steps. So that's why they are described. This is, in fact, the act of surrender. So these steps actually are surrender. Right? We are going through. Very good. Thank you. We are going through the process of surrender. And as far as the first three, there is a certain sequence. Okay, we can start. There are three divisions. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that these urges or vegas are divided into three categories: the body, the words, and the mind. So we have three bodily steps mentioned here. So maybe I will write them not in an exact order. So the last one I will write the first. Upasta vega. So upa, you know what the word upa, like in Upanishad, upa, Brimhita, upa, what else we have upa? Upendra, upa Indra, younger brother of Indra. You know, so you know this word, what this word means? Upa, Upanishad. sit below. So upa means below and sta situated, standing or situated. So upasta means situated below. So we are not saying exactly, but it's situated below. So it's genitals. The urge of genitals. Then the next one is udara. Like Bhima is called Vrikodara. Vrika udara. Vrika is wolf and udara belly. One who has. So these are udara vega. This is the urge of the belly. And then jiva. Oh yeah, I could. Well, here I will give no illustration, and here we can make a picture of a belly. How do we make a picture of a belly? In front or well, being not from this side. Okay, from this side. All right, so we can. Okay, let's try. All right, this is the back side, and this is the front side. Well, it should be more hanging, but anyway, you get the idea. It's a symbolic picture, just to help us remember. Just to help us remember. And then the next one is jiva. And the tongue. Okay, the tongue. Taramadhi jihvati. Jihva, we say every day in our prayer. So the tongue, okay, maybe.
Can we say jiva vega or?
Jiva Vega, yes, Jiva Vega. Vega, this is the tongue. Okay, so this is the tongue. Maybe I'll become an artist here in Switzerland. I don't know. Gradually. Yeah. Is it clear it's a tongue or do we need something else? Nose, eyes or... Wow. And these are eyes. This is a tongue. Okay. the tongue. Then the next... So these are three. These three are... in the category of the body. And Srila Prabhupada notices that they are on a straight line. We are indulging in food that is too tasty. Then we want to overeat. And then by eating too much and tasty, usually somehow our bodies are conditioned and that for us tasty means very fatty and very sweet. And you know this kind of food. And then usually the genitals are agitated. So from up it goes down, down, down. Then the next category is the words. And it's just that, words. Vacho. Vacho. Vegan. And this word vak is in all Indo-European languages. We have voice in voce in Italian, voice in English, in German. What, do we have anything with vocal? Vocal?
There is the adjective
vocale. Vocale, okay, vocale. We have the Latin. Okay. So, vacho. These are the words. And... well, this is too good a word. We don't need to control that. So, words. And maybe we can... Okay, here's a face. This is two eyes. Here's a mouth. And we will...
Speaking bubble.
Yes, speaking blah, blah, blah. About huh? Blah blah. Okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
The the sacred syllables blah blah. Okay. Well, that's what we should control, the blah blah bubble. Okay, the words, right? All right, these are the words, and then the next category is the mind category. We have just in general mind. If you control the mind, so manasa vega, and krodha vega. All right. So we can, in other words, say that this is the attraction and repulsion. Yeah. So krodha is the repulsion when we don't like something, yeah. And manasavega is when we really like something. Oh, what is there? And I want it, and you know. So this is the mind, and we can maybe make. You see it oftentimes on the frontons of theaters, two masks. So one mask, so two masks. Only this one, two. One is a happy mask. Well, it looks like a pirate, I don't know why. Anyway, it's a symbolic picture. Keep it in mind. And one mask is the unhappy mask. Have you ever see this on theaters? So, and we can maybe make the bubble from the head, you know, it's the thoughts.
One is drama, the other is comedy.
Yes, drama and comedy, or tragedy and comedy. Yes, that's usually the two masks. If you want to see these masks in a better presentation, you have to go to your local drama or opera theater and find it. Usually it's somewhere there. All right, so these are the troubles that we have. So you don't have to be afraid of the exam. If you just remember some of these pictures, and if you just try the translation of the verse, it'll give you about 20% more or less of the mark. If you just give the translation of the verse. So Diogo Sami is saying that these are the six vegas that we need to control. So we have in our heart this river with the six vegas flowing, urges, and the journey to the highest treasure begins in our heart. It begins in our heart, where we have to learn to escape or to tolerate these urges. So we don't need to stop them. Oftentimes we are frustrated because we try to stop them. And it doesn't work, as you may have noticed. The more you try, the harder it gets, oftentimes, because they are powerful. The mind is very powerful, and Maya is very powerful. So when we are just, you know, trying to stop, it doesn't work. So the idea is to ignore them, to pay no attention to them. Do you have a better version of this? I see you have pictures also. So this is already some trick that jiva, that we can get from this instruction by Sri Rupa Goswami. Already Rupa Goswami in the first verse gives us some hints on what to do with these very strong currents in the heart. That we don't actually even need to stop them. We just have to learn to pay no attention to them, or not identify with them, or just tolerate them. Just tolerate them. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita says, if you remember. In the end of the second chapter, Krishna says, apuryamanam achalam pratishtam samudram apa pravisanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravisanti sarve sa santi matmoti nakama kami. A person who is like an ocean who is not disturbed even though so many rivers are flowing into it, and who doesn't desire his desires, nakama kami. So the desire may come, but you do not say, yes, I want it. Because that's the function of the mind, to produce desires. It's just the machine for producing desires. And contemporary business is creating these desires. The whole idea of advertisement is to plant these desires into our heads. Even though we didn't have that desire, but then we see some advertisement, one time, two times, three times, and then we see somebody else using this, and we think, yeah, I also need. It's important. And then we, like this saying, American saying goes, that we spend the money that we don't have to buy things that we don't need to impress people that we don't like. It's our life. So, because we are identifying with these desires, but we don't have to identify. The desire may come, and we have an option to say, this is not my desire, this is just a desire. And I do not desire to desire that. Or I do not. So, okay, this desire may be coming, all right, but it will come and go, unless I feed it, unless I identify with it and give it energy. And if you don't feed it, then just like what Prabhupada was saying, that what do you do with unwanted guest? Just don't feed him. If you don't feed him, he was saying this about disease. If you don't feed the disease, it will go like an unwanted guest.
When you were born, you made like a body, the old group?
Three. Bhaktisiddhanta
said. The group upstairs is what, mind or?
This is words and this is mind. Yeah, these two is mind.
And the one in the middle, just
words. Words, yeah. So mind, words and body. So two categories in the mind, one category in the words, just words, and the body, three categories. Three categories there. Some word, something not clear, something needs clarification. All right. So you may have this experience that if you don't identify, if you don't feed that desire, that's oftentimes the lesson that a neophyte has to learn very hard way. That when we start practicing yoga, sometimes mind is stirred, and sometimes it seems that we have we are becoming worse than we were before. We think, oh my God, I used to be such a good boy, such a good girl. I was a vegetarian. I was a spiritual person. And now I'm chanting Hare Krishna and I have these terrible, terrible desires in my heart. Had terrible thoughts in my heart. And, you sometimes can become even scared. You may think, what is this? You know, I became worse. I was better than before. Maybe this is because of Bhakta John. You know, I'm talking to him too much. That I think that's what could it be. You know, a terrible doubt comes into, suspicion comes into our mind. But the problem is that when we were good before Krishna consciousness, it was good for us. It was profitable for us. it was based on some false ego. So it was good to be, you know, known as the polite person, as a kind person, as a light-hearted person. Whereas when I have to practice this in Krishna consciousness, that then these same qualities are needed not for me, but for service. So therefore, those qualities that I thought that I had, they were not real qualities. They were just a show that I was used to put on to get what I want in this material world. Whereas in case of service for Krishna, it's no longer a show. It's for real. It's not, and it's not on the basis of ego. It's not for me. So that's why sometimes the mind can rebel and show the very ugly face. It looks like you have a, sometimes it feels like it, like you have a whole zoo in the heart, you know. And, oh my God, where is this coming from? I was much better. It's terrible, terrible. And then you try, go away, and you push it, and it becomes stronger. You push it harder, and it becomes stronger. And you think, oh my God, what is, I'm a demon, I'm a demon. I'm. So that's what also Prahlad Maharaj says in Hari Bhakti Sudadaya. He says that a person starts devotional service, and after some time, his lust, anger, greed grows to the sky, becomes high as the Himalayas. And most people, at this point, they give up. Many people, at this point, they think, oh, it's impossible. How is it possible? And they give up. But some, but they miss the whole idea. But those who are persistent, those who are serious, they just say, Krishna, I cannot, you know, stop it. I cannot control my mind. But maybe I am a demon. Still, I know that I have to serve you. So, okay, I am a demon. Okay, but I will serve you. I'll serve you regardless. And then, as soon as you do that, what you are doing, you stop paying attention to the mind. You stop fighting with the mind. And you turn your back on the mind, and then all of a sudden this mountain, these terrible things in the heart, they shrink. Whoop, and they turn small as a pebble. They become very, very small. It seemed to be a very big problem, but then after some years, you may read your diary, or you may remember it, and think, oh yeah, I was praying about this. Oh, really? And it's no longer a problem. It's no longer a problem for you. So this is the idea of this period. Sometimes Krishna makes your mind, or your mind becomes so strong that the only option that we have is to learn to ignore the mind. This is the idea. In the fifth canto, Srila Prabhupada writes that the strongest weapon for controlling the mind is ignoring it, neglecting it, paying no attention. And also gives the second weapon, which is Guru's order. So when we are just surrendering to Guru's order without a concern for victory or defeat. So that means also we are not paying attention to the these waves in the mind. We know that I have an order. I have my Guru's mission, and I'm doing that. And that also helps to control the mind. But this whole turbulence teaches us to learn to pay less attention to the mind. As the saying goes, that a humble person is not the person who thinks less of himself, but it's the person who thinks about himself less. So he spends less time thinking about himself. Not the one who thinks, oh, I'm so fallen, I'm so little. So we can see already in this one word, tolerate, so much is there. The whole arsenal, the whole weaponry for dealing with the mind is there, tolerate. Prabhupada once told a story about this in Bombay. Some sannyasis were there in his room. They came and asked him that how do we deal with the mind, and what if some desires arise in the mind. So he said that once Yudhishthir was asked by someone, he was asked that your mother is, she has a blessing that she is always young and beautiful. Do you never feel any agitation when you see her? And Yudhishthira, being very honest, he said that, yes, sometimes I feel some agitation when I see her beauty. And then they asked him, then what do you do? And then Yudhishthira said, nothing. Nothing. So he doesn't identify with that. Right? And then at that moment, when Prabhupada was telling this, the door opened, and a young daughter of a life member came, and she brought some prasadam for Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada looked at her, and he said, just like here, just see, this is a young, beautiful girl, very attractive. So, what do we do? Really, you know, flustered, you know. These men standing there, and Prabhupada saying, so, young, beautiful girl, what do we do now? And nothing. Yes, correct. We do nothing. That's all. So, Prabhupada was giving this story to tell us how we can control the mind. These are some points about mind control. So, next time some desires arise, you can do just nothing. So, you need to go to transfer. Okay, let's have a break for... How much time do you need? 10 minutes. Yeah? Okay, let's have 10 minutes. And if any desire arises in your mind, meanwhile, what do you do?
When we have questions, we can ask when.
Yeah, no. So now Uddhava Prabhu is asking that modern psychology talks about repression, right? And how it's very dangerous for health. In fact, it was the one who spoke about it was the old granddaddy Freud. Freud, and he certainly has some achievement in that he brought up brought in the concept of this unconscious, subconscious. Are we all here? Anybody?
Julian is still here.
But otherwise, so many of his ideas are have been rejected and criticized. Practically all of his disciples have went on to found their own schools. And one of the most influential psychologists of the 20th century, probably, like, if we name three, he would probably be one of them, Richard Bandler. He is invariably calling him not Sigmund Freud, but he's calling him Sickman Fraud. Sickman Fraud. So, but what he was talking about was repressing some urge into the unconscious. And that creates a backlash when this power, which we try to close our eyes upon and try to, you know, just push it out of our consciousness, it's not lost anywhere, and then it comes out as the shadow, as some of the other his followers are saying, and as some very aggressive, violent manifestations of either anger or some inner problem and so forth, some psychological problems. So, Purnachanda Maharaj was actually analyzing this in his book, Unspoken Obstacles on the Path of Bhakti, and he says that there is a big difference between suppression and repression. What the psychologists are speaking about is the danger of pretending we don't have the problem. As it's the danger of lying to ourselves. It's pushing it out into the unconscious. Right? That creates psychological problems. This is what's dangerous. And indeed, if we lie to ourselves, this is the worst thing. This is worse than even lying to others. Because when we lie to others, at least there is a chance that we understand what's the truth. But if we lie to ourselves, that's very dangerous. So, yes,
we should be honest. However, in the case of a sadhaka or a yogi, there can be, well, in 99.9% of the cases, there can be no question of being unconscious of these urges. These urges are making themselves very apparent that we want this, we want this, give us that, give us that. And we are, you cannot just, say that they do not exist. We just don't identify with them and we don't act upon them. And in this way, we redirect our attention. But we do not try to pretend they are not there. So in this case, it's quite different from this dangerous phenomenon of repression. Okay.
Then for non-devotees or for depressed people, isn't it that they're so entangled in all those urges that they're really not there and that they're really not aware of it?
Yes. They have no idea of who they are. They have no center, basically, in their life. In fact, usually it's only when we start practicing some kind of yoga that we even get the concept of mind and intelligence. First time, you may remember, first time you read, it says mind and it says intelligence. You think, why two? Isn't it the same thing? Mind, intelligence? You know? Do you remember being somewhat confused by these two things? But as soon as you start practicing yoga, then you see that there is a part of consciousness that just produces the desires. Oh, I like that. Oh, that would be nice. Oh, look at that. And, so, and there is another part of consciousness which says, not good. Should do that. Should not do this. I don't know, maybe in a German mentality, there is so much... I don't know. Is it... I think all German speak, German, Swiss, and Austrian. I think also there is a big respect to the sense of Pflicht, isn't there? In everywhere, in all duty, right? There's a big respect to that. So, of course, what do we understand on the duty? So, when we actually have some higher goals, and when we try to introduce the idea of something that I actually need, as opposed to something that I would like to. So, mind is I'd like to, I don't like to. Whereas intelligence means I need, I don't need. This is good, this is not good. In long-term perspective. Most of the so-called karmi non-devotees, they have a very hard time. They are a tangle of these conflicting desires, and they try to identify with all these desires. They think this is me, and then they are frustrated. And you have even philosophers saying that yes, you should be courageous. This modern atheistic existentialism, Sartre, Camus, oh my God, this is direct road to, just be honest with yourself. If you are a criminal, be a criminal, Come on, who is yourself? And, what nature are we speaking about? So, originally, of course, existentialism was very theistic, like this Kierkegaard was speaking about three stages of development. One is static, basically the mind enjoying. Next one, ethic. So this is the intelligence, what we need to do, what is actually good in long term. And then the highest he was speaking about as religious. So when we accept our eternal duty, not just ethical duty towards other people, but eternal duty, our connection with God. So that was existentialism. Yeah, so people need help. People are confused. Even we are confused, sometimes. Or oftener than sometimes. So we need to have clarity in our inner world. Usually the period I mentioned is the helpful period where a young devotee learns to distance himself from the mind, to observe the difference between I and the mind, and see that the mind's desires do not have to be followed, and the mind's all kind of, you know, garbage, we can say, is not me. It's just, you know, because of the momentum from before, because it's the same mind I had when I was a Scorpio. It's the same mind I had when I was a dog. Same mind I had when I was a pig. Same mind I had when I was a horse. So the subtle body is the same. So it's all, you know, all these samskaras, impressions are still there. So now when I try to purify this mind, sometimes it comes out, you know, these things. And when we learn to, you know, do nothing about you know, not to identify with these desires, and instead redirect our attention on something positive that actually corresponds to our soul's nature. Onto chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, or to something easier like reading Krishna Lila, or to the Kirtan. So when you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, it's easier to get away, but, you know, we have some things to bring the mind back, you know. So when we are Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, you know, it's, well, it's not you want or don't want. You have to pay attention. You have mridangas and... So redirect the mind onto the positive spiritual track. Something else? Naina Manjari, did you have some point? Some question? Comment?
Yeah, I had, but...
yeah, okay. Yes. All right. So, in the beginning, we have these six steps of surrender, six urges we need to deal with. And they are the door to Uttama Bhakti. And the Acharyas in their commentaries are describing, are quoting some verses from Padma Purana, saying that the pure swan of the Lord will not enter the heart which is contaminated with the dirt of lust, grief, and anger, and so forth. Lamentation, and so forth. These make the heart unpleasant for the Lord to enter. So that's why these things are preparing the heart, purifying the heart to invite the Lord into the pure heart. Also, it shows that bhakti is not cheap, it's serious. It urges us to approach the holy name without the 10 offenses, without the 10 namaparats. So we commit offenses because of these different urges. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary, says that Upadeshamrita gives two kinds of instructions. Negative and positive, something we have to give up and something that we have to embrace. And he says that there are many of so-called devotees for whom Upadeshamrita is scary as Yamaraj. Because it makes forces us to become a little more serious. But then he says, those who are faithful, who have faith, with the help of Upadeshamrita, with the help of these instructions from Rupa Goswami, can easily achieve bhava, can easily achieve the level of ecstasy, and then achieve prema and absorb themselves in bhakti rasa. So this is the path. Yeah? So we have to traverse this path, and we have something that we have to avoid and something that we accept. And then we can achieve the spontaneous platform, and we can go to the highest. Pretty much, yes. can see that it's, it goes one after another. Of course, we how do we control the mind? We probably saying that we are accepting. How do we control the tongue? We accept prasad. How do we control the genitals? Prabhupada is saying it's only for Krishna conscious children, otherwise not to be used. And the mind, we fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. So these things, these six things are to be controlled by any yogi, in any yoga, in any serious spiritual school. But our advantage is that we have what to fix them on, and even better, whom to fix them on. We have a beautiful, all-attractive person on whom we can direct our all the capacities of our consciousness and of our soul. So we are in a much more fortunate position. Whereas all these other yogas and like Buddhism or everything, it's just, you know, fighting only the negative, you know, just neti-neti, just fighting with these things. And it's difficult always, and nowadays is, if for us it is difficult, then with bhakti, with Hare Krishna mantra, with the kirtan, not to speak about other things. Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport, he gives the introduction about the general idea of purification. So he describes the three or four degrees of intelligence. Who has read the purport? Okay. So, who is the most intelligent person? Who learns by hearing? Yes. Then, second most? By seeing. Yeah. So, one, you just heard and you say, oh, okay, I better don't do this. The other, he has heard, but he's not convinced. But then he sees, oh my God, he did that and look what happened to him. And I better don't do this. And the third class in intelligence is you still do it, and then you are kicked, punished. So like a thief, he goes, steals something, and then he's put in jail, and then he thinks, oh, I better avoid it. And the fourth class intelligence, one hears, one sees, one is punished, and still one cannot give up. So that's the fourth class intelligence. So the first class intelligence is just by learning by hearing. And then we have the three more examples. So one example was a thief who doesn't learn. And we have three more examples of people who do not become purified. So what are the three more examples of people who do not become purified? Yes, Christians. Yes, Christians who go to church to confess their sins and then come out and happily go for the next for another round of the same. Elephant bath. So he goes, he takes bath, and then he comes out and he either rolls in the mud or he sprinkles some mud on himself. So from the point of view of bodily hygiene, it seems like his bath was not very effective. They may have some reasons. I heard that they deal with some insects by that. But from the point of view of, you know, just bodily cleanliness, it's not very effective. So elephant bath. And the third example, which is the most probably startling example for us, are so who are these? Us. Who may be committing sins just expecting that my chanting will take care of it. So committing sins on the strength of chanting, and this is very dangerous. It is very dangerous. So three examples, or four examples if you count the thief. This is coming in the sixth canto, this discussion. Because at the end of the fifth canto, Shukadeva Goswami has described the hellish planets to Parikshit Maharaj, which are quite scary. And then Parikshit Maharaj is asking, then how can one avoid, how can people avoid these hellish planets? And Shukadeva Goswami tests him. It's like a midterm test. Shukadeva Goswami tests Parikshit Maharaj several times during the Bhagavatam. He gives him the wrong answer. He tells him, well, if you want to avoid hell, you just do prayashchitta. You do some ritual of atonement. And then you become cleared of this danger. So Parikshit Maharaj successfully passes that test. He says, yes, but we see, like elephant, kunjara shauchavat, the elephant takes bath and then again sprinkles dust on himself. So we see also people are going atone, performing atonement or prayashchitta, and then again return back to the same activities. So isn't there something more effective? So then Shukadeva Goswami gives him the verses about knowledge, that knowledge about spiritual nature can lift us from the platform of these dangers, of these dangerous desires. And then he speaks the verse about bhakti. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana dunvanti karcnyana niharamiva dunvantyagham niharamiva karcnyana. How does it go? Kritsnam dunvanti dunvantyagham niharamiva bhaskara. That when one performs pure bhakti to Vasudev, then like sun dispels fog, this bhakti removes all the sin from the heart. So this is the answer. So Prabhupada, because we are dealing with the urges, which push us oftentimes to the sinful or dangerous activities from which we suffer already, not only in the next life, we suffer now, in this life. If you read, I mean, any of these sinful activities, and any of our regulative principles, we see, we can just read statistics, or we can just read the research, and we can see that people are suffering already now. Like, of course, smoking and intoxication is kind of obvious. Meat, also more or less obvious, you know, rate of cancer and rate of heart disease and so forth. Actually, most of the contemporary diseases can be avoided just by changing the diet, and especially avoiding meat. Illicit sex, there was so much also, well, not so much. About this there is less research, but still there is some research which shows that people who are indulgent in their sexual relationships, they have a much higher rate of suicide, depression, and all the other unpleasant things. So even here we see that there is a hell if we do not control our urges. Oftentimes we do not control our anger and we destroy some relationship. We do not control our words and we make a fool out of ourselves. Right? So there is the undesirable result is already perceivable right now. So what to do with that is, of course, bhakti, is engaging in devotional service. So engaging all of these in Krishna's service. And here is one mantra. It's a mystical mantra. It has the power to wake a sleeping devotee. Sharira vidya jal jodendriya tahekal jive pele vishaya sagore taramadye jihati lobamoy sudurmati ake jeta kadina sansare krishna baro doyamoy koribare jihajai sa prasadam nadilo bhai seya namrita kao radha krishna gunagao premedako shichaitane nitai. It's a mantra. If you are giving a class and people are falling asleep, you can just chant this mantra. Yeah, it makes. So the body is the lump of ignorance, avidya jal. Senses are a network of paths leading to death. We have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment, and tongue is most difficult to control. 11th canto, Uddhava Gita, Krishna says that even a Muni, a great sage, who has controlled all other things, still cannot control the tongue. So everything else controlled, tongue can catch by the tongue. But Krishna is so merciful that he resolved this problem for us by giving us a very nice prasadam. Right? If you have such a nice prasadam, why do you need all kinds of garbage that, you know, that, I mean, maybe not all garbage, maybe some things are not garbage, like, I don't know, Swiss chocolate, maybe it's an offense to call it, you know, with such a lowly word, it's it's something nice. But if you have, you know, nice, tasty Krishna prasad, then there is no need. What to speak about things like real garbage, like meat and all these things. Vodka, and, you know, one devotee. He became a devotee, but he was a part of a, you know, like drug cartel or something, you know, drug gang. And so his old friends would sometimes, he became a devotee, so his friends would sometimes come to the temple and they would call him, and he would come out and he would bring them Charanamrita. And they would, each of them, get a little, you know, of Charanamrita, and they would take, and they would feel, yes, it's quite a good high today, yeah, good, okay, thank you. So they would really relish, you know, because it actually does influence your consciousness, even though it's just, you know, water with which you wash the deities. But it has such a, that even these drug addicts, even they, you know, could see, wow, this has a very special effect on the consciousness, much better than the drugs. And one of my friends, devotees, he was a drug addict for like, I forgot, 20 years or 25 years. He started quite early. So he, when he got his second initiation, he told me, Adi, get the second initiation as soon as possible. You know, this Gayatri mantra, it's better than acid. It's better than acid. Yeah. Anyway, Krishna is merciful. So you have... You don't need all these other things if you practice Krishna consciousness. And especially for people, you know, who are like in the beginning, just coming from their, you know, meat-eating diet, then for them, it's, they don't even have to try to restrain how much they eat. It's good to give them the most opulent prasadam, and the more the better, right? Even, you know, something that's not maybe so good to eat for us every day, because it's difficult for the liver, you know, all these fried things, and, you know, the liver will say, hey, what do you think I am, you know? But when a person who was used to some meat diet or something like that tastes such a nice prasadam, then they will forget about these lower things. In fact, for us, you know, even the idea of meat or the smell of meat, or the, sometimes people think, oh, vegetarian, oh, you are, you know, controlling, like trying to really restrain yourself. Oh, no meat. But, you know, once you avoid meat just for a few months, it stinks. It stinks. It's horrible. It's untouchable. Krishna is very, very kind. And Prabhupada is mentioning some other things that are also to be avoided for the tongue. So, pan in India, you can see. People are, sometimes they speak like this. They have full mouths. Have you seen that? And then if you ask them a question, they try to answer you with a full mouth.
And if you keep asking, and sometimes they spit out a red. You may have seen this red.
Is it really intoxicating?
Like a little bit. Just a little bit. Like, makes a little bit, you know.
Sometimes rickshawalas do a bit.
Yeah, rickshawalas, taxiwalas, everybody, you know. Many people. It just makes you a little, I don't know. Not totally, no, not really stoned. A little bit, yeah. Just a little bit.
We offer to the deities the betel,
not the tambula. Yeah, usually Radha Krishna we offer it. And then, I know.
We throw on it. Sometimes we have to taste it, it's enough.
In Sweden, they had an arrangement with some pharmacy that they would exchange the offered tambul with the unoffered, with the raw ingredients. So they would give it, or to some Indian shops, I forgot. They would give it to some another. It would not be wasted. Happy pigs. All right. So pan. Tobacco, betel nuts, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur adds here rabri. You know rabri? Oh, rabri is like a cooked down milk. Cooked down, cooked down, cooked down. Or if you take the from the top, skim this solid part, and then again skim and again skim, and make it sweet. It's very tasty. It's very nice. But like really boiled down. It's not the same. It's like if you take from the top, and if it's very sweet, you take it from the top and put aside. And from top aside, from the top aside. It's soft. And it has some little structure. You can come to Vrindavan, you just go to any sweet shop, they'll try it, offer it to your deities. So, but Bhaktisiddhanta says that also rabri, milk, cream, and ghee belong here as foods that can be overindulged in. So we can you know, be carried away by the tongue. And then we may get this mirror disease, like we have here. You know what's a mirror disease, right? It's when you cannot see your feet without a mirror. You know? You need a mirror to see your feet. Yeah. Okay, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also analyzes all of these things, both here, the urges, and in other places, in three categories. So what are the three undesirable kinds of speech that we reject? We don't speak, we try to avoid listening. And undesirable mental activity, and so forth. So here it mostly refers to speech. Three categories to reject. So these are vikarma, karma, and so-called akarma. So vikarma is sin, right? This is what people mostly are doing nowadays. Then karma is pious but material activity which binds us. And then so-called akarma is avoiding material activity but indulging in impersonal cultivation of impersonal knowledge, offending the Lord, saying that the Lord has no body, that trying to cut off his feet and his head and everything. So when we are controlling the words, we are trying to avoid speaking or hearing about sinful activities, also mental activities, we try to avoid mental activities which are directed towards sin, toward material piety for material enjoyment, and impersonal knowledge which denigrates and diminishes the position of the Supreme Lord. Any questions here? All right, so we can see that there is a theme which connects this verse with the preface from Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada spoke about the need to become a Goswami and the need to cultivate the mode of goodness. So this describes what is a Goswami. Right? The one who can tolerate, Vishahat, the one who can tolerate these six urges. Prabhupada says in the last paragraph, the conclusion is that one who can control these six items, speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, is to be called a Swami or Goswami. Unless one is master of his senses, he should not be called Goswami, but Godasa, servant of the senses. Following the footsteps of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, all Swamis and Goswamis should fully engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Transcendental loving service of the Lord. Who tried to do your service for the pleasure of the Lord, or to chant for the pleasure of the Lord? You tried? Okay, you tried? So this was our homework. As we do our service, to offer it before we do to the Lord, or at least afterwards, better before, and best both after and before and during, to do it for Krishna's pleasure. So what's your experience about who tried chanting for Krishna's pleasure? You tried? Okay. What's your experience? Is it easy? Did you manage to create this mood, or did you manage to hold it for a long time? So it's quite interesting, even though it's the essence of all our endeavors. This is what we are supposed to develop, this skill to act for with this desire. But how often do we try to do this? How often are we in that mood? And even when I have nothing else to do, but just sit and chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There's nothing else I have to do right at this time. And I can be sitting right in front of the Lord, right in front of the deities. And still, you know, to do it for His pleasure, the mind runs away. Sometimes you chant just, you know, one mantra, then you think about something else. Again, you bring the mind back, you chant one mantra. This is where real taste lies. The deeper we can go into that mood, the more we can discover the taste of bhakti, and the more amazing results of bhakti will you see. So please continue with this exercise, which can be formed as a simple phrase before we do anything. Say, Krishna, may you be pleased with this. I'm doing this for your satisfaction. And try to actually do it for his satisfaction. Or, at least whenever you remember about this, and you can use your emotions as a signal. If you experience any emotion that's not completely happy, if you experience some negative emotion, you can use it as a signal to remind yourself, it means I'm not acting for Krishna's pleasure. And you can try to offer now So, okay, I get this negative emotion. Why? Because somewhere deep, either deep underneath or not so deep underneath, I want to control, I want to enjoy, or I want to get approval. So that's why I experience either anger or fear or anxiety or lamentation, whatever, you know, or apathy or whatever or the emotion, negative emotion you may experience. Sometimes positive when it's fulfilled. So let this serve as a signal to, at least at this moment, find it in our heart to act for Krishna's pleasure. You have some point, Enaman?
And then for me it's difficult to imagine that Krishna likes the japa. So for me it's more easy to like to imagine that Krishna likes more bhajan or kirtan.
It could be a very powerful technique for improving your japa. To actually imagine what Krishna hears and hear what Krishna hears. And try to chant sweetly so that Krishna is happy with your names. It can be a very powerful technique for focusing your mind and involving your heart. Because indeed, sometimes we can listen to what we are chanting and you know, Krishna must be very generous to like it, you know. Krishna is a really liberal and cool guy. But if we listen and we try to remember, okay, Krishna, what Krishna hears now? Does he like what I'm saying? Does he like? So, okay, let me try to say, not Hare Krishna, but you know, like, okay, try. Okay, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Add some love, some affection to it, you know, and hear it. Try to hear. As Shashnam Maharaj was saying, try to hear, quoting Srila Prabhupada, try to hear yourself chant sincerely. So hear yourself and hear the quality of your chanting. So this could be a very good technique for improving our japa. Try to hear as Krishna hears your name and try to make it pleasing. Especially I find that for more sensitive or emotional natures, and oftentimes for ladies, this is a very powerful technique to concentrate on, to make tremendous improvement to the japa, to chant beautifully and hear hear yourself chant with affection. And maybe you have seen there was this beautiful movie made by some ISKCON devotees. Very nice movie, Haridas Thakur. Anybody saw that? Saw that movie? And I from that movie, I don't remember much, but I remember how Haridas Thakur gives instructions. And I think he also got instruction from his guru, the same. Prem se, also we are saying it every day in Premadvani. Prem se kaho. You're not saying Prem se kaho Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaurava. It doesn't say just chant. It says Prem se. Chant with love. You know, chant Hare Krishna Prem se. With love. With affection. So at least we can try to put and hear what Krishna hears when we do this.
And so melodiously and with taste and really like 2 hours and I really enjoyed his chanting. So I even though it was positive. Yep. And I remember in the beginning of my spiritual life I always meditate that my guru is sitting in my heart and listening to my chanting.
Oh.
And this was powerful also.
Yes, I'm sure that was very good japa.
Yeah. It was my best japa. But then with the years it just got lost.
Yeah, we kind of relax and run.
Sorry?
We relax in our endeavors and we start running and we...
Yeah.
So yes, so let's practice. Let's practice. We should actually go higher with every month and every year in our practice.
But yeah, this is like good point. Like because sometimes we will. I mean, it was in my case. I reach some level. It was okay. So, I reach it, yeah. And then it's lost again.
Yeah.
So,
yes. We stop endeavoring. We stop going deeper. And but.
Frustration.
So we need to resurrender, we need to brush up. So that's why we have courses like this, that's why we have retreats, that's why we have a constant reminder to go deeper and deeper. And if nothing works there, then we have kicks from the material energy to remind, hey, keep going. Don't relax. Yes?
There was some discussions in Mayapur, also the senior devotees, they were discussing how can we improve our chanting, so they brought up many tricks and this and that. So at the last they say bring always the most important thing is to bring mind back, always back. Mm-hmm. If you recognize or realize that mind is going somewhere, just bring it back.
Yes.
Whole business we have to do, bringing back.
Yes, yes.
Nothing else, no other tricks and this and that. Mm. Maybe a few things, maybe also supports, but
yes,
this is the main thing, bring back the.
It has cumulative effect, because according to yoga, this is a very positive samskara when you bring just this act of bringing the mind back. And these positive yogic samskaras can accumulate. So even though it seems like it's hopeless, I already brought it back 100 times and it still ran away. It's not in vain. If you there is a point where quantity goes into quality. You don't know at which time, but you know at this 37th time or 113th time. But at one of these times when you bring the mind back, it stays there. You know, Krishna catches the mind. So because this samskara accumulates and then it pushes us. To a higher level. Yeah, it's a very good point. So there is one other exercise one can do. If you notice your mind going away, you can try to trace back the steps. How did you get there? It's a very fascinating exercise. At first time, you may even be unable to trace all the steps back. But you know, once you start doing this, then usually the mind becomes a little bit more concentrated. And then you can see what's the value of thoughts. You know, because the mind is so crazy. It jumps, you know, everywhere and anywhere. It's incredible how the mind is jumping. It's it can start from something very good, from something very positive. Well, anyway, this is the usual example I give. Like, I catch myself thinking about sex, right? And then I try to see how did it start. And then I see, okay, I was chanting and relishing the holy name, and I was thinking, oh, this Hare Krishna mantra is so nice. The holy name is so nice. First thought. Second thought. Why is it so nice today? Why do I have such taste today? Third thought. Maybe it's because we had a Harinam yesterday. It was a very good Harinam. We were singing for Krishna's glory, and it was, you know, it was powerful, and it was so many devotees and so many people. Next thought. And even though it was raining, people were listening. People were inspired. It was cold, but people were stopping and listening to our Harinam. Yes. And among these people, even though it was cold, there were some girls in miniskirts. And from there, it's not far already. So it starts with something very nice. Yeah? Oh, the holy name is so beautiful. Right? It can start from anything. That's why Prabhupada is saying, just here. Yeah? Because as soon as there is some mental speculation. But the point is, when we see these jumps, Sometimes it's such crazy jumps, such crazy associations and connections that you see that all these valuable thought, my thoughts, you know, my thinking process, that it's not so valuable, actually. Okay, thank you so much. So please, we'll officially conclude. Please work on chanting and offering, not only chanting for Krishna's pleasure, try to hear as Krishna hears you chant with affection, and try to offer whatever, let's try to offer whatever we do for Krishna's pleasure, either before or at least whenever we remember, and as much as we can during what we do, to thinking that may Krishna be pleased by what I'm doing. And let's carry over one exercise from yesterday to tomorrow. We had one quality or attitude that you were supposed to choose for yourself, and find one example from Shastra and one example from the community. So we will please try to focus on this, do this for one more day, and we will discuss this tomorrow. So, not necessarily. Some quality or point of attitude that you need for yourself. So this is the six urges we can use to approach the temple of pure bhakti, of surrender. And we have to learn to tolerate these by not identifying and redirecting our attention onto something positive, like trying to please Krishna with our affectionate chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Please accept my humble obeisances. You had some question about the Priya Prabhu?
This is according to Krodha, and he said that we cannot stop our anger. So,
yes.
We cannot stop anger altogether.
Yes.
But if we simply become angry with those, it means to
act or to feel.
Einsetzen.
Einsetzen.
To bring anger to Krishna. But what about the other six, five enemies of the mind, for example? Does it also impact that you also cannot...
Last greed?
Yeah,
there's a song by Narottam Das Thakur. He says that my lust I will engage for, what does he say? For desiring...
Only envious you cannot...
Yeah.
Is this what I want to ask?
Yeah, only envy he doesn't engage. Yeah. But
so when it's not possible to really stop to be envy. Yeah. Does it also impact? Because anger is also, you can't really stop or
but is your question about specifically envy?
Yeah. But to this sentence, but probably meant to last to angry.
Anger, yeah, he speaks about anger. Yes. Well, any of these enemies can be surrendered. So you can just take this feeling, like let's say envy. Can you remember some time you were envious? I can tell you, I was envious yesterday when I saw how Shridham Prabhu pulls out such interesting points from such simple verses. I thought, wow, he really knows how to do this. And I felt ping, some pinch of little envy. I thought, what is this? You know, Vaishnava is giving such a nice class and you feel envy. But so you can try to remember last time you felt something like this, and then try to really bring it into focus. Accept this feeling. Don't fight it. Welcome into your awareness. Right? So try to like isolate this feeling clearly. Try to feel this feeling clearly. Yeah, don't fight, just allow it to be. Because this is the first thing. Because we are fighting, and what you resist persists, they say. Because this is the mind, and we give it, so to say, we give energy to it. So first thing, say, okay, you want to be envious? Okay, be envious. Nice. Allow it. Just like if you are trying to pull something out of the pocket, you know, and you are pulling, and you are just breaking apart and still not getting out. So first thing you say, okay, leave it alone. Don't pull, just leave it alone. Or like, I remember some months ago, I was in the car, and I tried to unbuckle myself, and it didn't get out. So then I just pushed it back, and then I pressed the button and it popped out, the buckle. So first thing, okay, allow it. Welcome into your awareness, this feeling. Yeah? No need to fight it. Just allow it. Now take this feeling, okay, speaking about envy. It's of course one of the more difficult feelings to surrender, but it's not impossible. So you take it and allow it. To feel. And then next thing, you can ask yourself, would it be possible for me to be without this feeling, be free from this feeling of envy? Could I just let go of it? Is it possible? Theoretically, is it possible? And, you know, usually the answer will be yes, because just 5 minutes ago I was without it, right? So could I let go? Okay. Then the next question you can ask, would I like to let go of it? Right? So would I want to, you know, first is it possible? Could I surrender this this feeling? Could I you know, just stop having this feeling, give it up for Krishna? And the next one, would I like to give it up for Krishna? And really fine, do I want to stop having it? And then next you ask yourself when. And what this does, and then try to just surrender it. Think that, okay, Krishna, this feeling I'm giving it to you. What it does, even if you say no, like if you say, would you like to be free, to surrender this feeling, this envy to Krishna? Say no. Even that makes you more free. Because you take the responsibility. Otherwise, we think that I am a victim of this feeling, that this feeling controls me. But when I say, no, I want to keep it, it becomes obvious that there is I, there is a feeling, and there is my choice. Right? And I choose to keep it. And it's okay. You know, it's okay. And then, once I own this feeling, once I own the responsibility that it's my choice, then it's kind of finding this knot or finding the button, you know, where do you tie it to yourself? And then you can ask, so okay, so when would I like to give it up? How about in 5 seconds? Okay, so for 5 seconds still feel it, and then if I want 3, 4, 5, okay, let go. and you can feel, you know, that already some perspective is shifting. And if it's still there, you can try it again and just go deeper and again. So kind of, it's possible. It's just finding this hinge, the hook where we hold it, where we choose, accepting this where I choose, and then releasing it. And it may also help if we go deeper of why what is the reason I feel envious. Do I want to control like this person? Do I want to or enjoy like this person? Or do I want to get approval like this person? or do I, or am I envious because I am afraid for my security? That you know, my identity is threatened. Oh, there is such a qualified person, then maybe I will not get, I will not be able to retain my position or status or whatever prestige. So I'm security. Yeah? So self-identity. So and then bring this. Usually there are just these three or four basic rocks on which all of our false emotions are based. One is control and enjoyment together with it. Another one is approval from others. And another one is security. So surviving, fear of death, basically. Or big or small. But once you bring it close, desire for approval, desire for control, or desire for survival, security, then it becomes clear that, you know, what can I do? You know, it's you just have to surrender. So by practicing, you know, it's possible. This is what Krishna mentions. Bhaktaram yagatapasam sarvalokam ahasaram suhridam sarabhudam. Gatavam santim richati. If you know that Krishna is the controller, that Krishna is the friend, then you can be peaceful. Why? Because it means I don't have to be the controller. I don't have to be the. I'm not supposed to be the friend of the whole world that everybody says, oh, jai, jai. That's Krishna's role. That's not my role. So if I am able to surrender this, then I'm a happy man. And by work, this is yoga, you know, going inside, and sometimes it's possible just by seeing a pure devotee, or possible just by immersing ourselves in kirtan, in shastra, and we let go. But sometimes it's kind of, you know, there's a hook there, some anchor. So sometimes it's helpful to go back and unhook it, see how I choose it, and then just say, Krishna, this is foolish. Why do I have to choose to feel this, you know, this emotion? Okay, I chose it. And I'm probably trying to find some enjoyment in identifying with this emotion. But let me surrender this to you for Krishna's pleasure. Like that. And then try again. And every time you see that, it becomes a little better and better every time you surrender.
One way I also recognized to conquer actually envy is mostly personal, so Krishna consciousness mostly. So then you just serve that person and make some friendship, and somehow you get part
of the blessing.
Or, yeah, you get the blessings, and one time you are involved, maybe doing kirtan, then you are also involved and in front and doing kirtan somehow, or you get the blessings to do also kirtan, or whatever.
Yes.
So by serving.
Yeah. Serve the person. Serve the person. Find something good in this person. Appreciation. Yeah. Gratitude. You can also pray to Krishna for this person. You know, or rather, to ask Krishna to bless him more. This kind of like going against this tendency of running.
Sometimes it's difficult to do this step, but sometimes you can do it artificially and then.
Yeah, just start.
Rolling.
Yes, just start.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. See you tomorrow.